Hello, listeners. You are listening to another episode of That's Entertainment. I am your pop culture maven, Jeff Malone, and my regular co-host, Aunt Beth, is not here today, but with us from live from Export PA, please welcome back my good friend Jeff Smith.
Jeff, it's good to be back on. What year number is this? Have you counted?
For us doing a March Madness recap episode, I believe it's the fourth one. I think I looked up. I actually was looking this up. I think our first time was 3 years ago. That sounds right. Because do you remember when, what year the eclipse was?
I do feel like it was 2023.
No, I think that was actually, I think that was 24, because that was not, that wasn't the first time we did it. I think that was the second time we did it.
Okay.
It's all blurring together. I think it was 2023. But anyway, yes. What did you think of that intro there? I think in previous years I've done like the round ball rock style intro, but then I was like, wait, well, actually, that's not March Madness music; it's basketball music. But so then I tried to do this, the very beginning intro to the tune of the March Madness theme.
No, I mean, one of my favorite podcasts to listen to is a college basketball one called the Ion Basketball Podcast. Two guys on CBS Sports, Matt Norlander and Gary Parrish, put it on three times a week. And their intro is a band called Guster, which Matt Norlander is a big fan of. And he plays a Guster song 11 months out of the year. But as soon as it flips to March, and for your early April podcast, they'll use the late 90s March Madness intro from CBS, which is always a fan favorite as well and well-received. It's always disappointing that they'll do like their tournament wrap-up show, and then they'll flip back to the Guster intro. And, you know, a lot of people are disappointed at the fact that they only use that for about a month out of the year. But their mindset is always, you know, you can't have Christmas every day here. You got to wait to get to the good stuff. So that's what they've just run with. But it's always a shame when it does go away for another year. And they always make a big deal about it once the calendar flips and they do their first podcasts in March, because you're in conference tournament play. And they always amp it up big time once the theme comes back.
Well, there are people who listen to Christmas music year-round, so I bet there are some people who listen to the March Madness theme music year-round.
I mean, if you need to get your juices flowing in the middle of July, I mean, why not, right?
In case you are, you've just randomly stumbled onto this podcast, and... Hold on a second. Is that feedback coming? Did you hear that?
Yeah.
Is that from your end?
I've got like somebody on the, I've got somebody on the road, like outside of my house, like taking like their car with their humongous muffler on it, just joyriding down the road. So you should be good now.
Well, that was a little treat to our listeners. Some of the unique sounds of Western Pennsylvania. In case you're just, as I was saying, you randomly stumbled onto this podcast and this is your first time ever listening to an episode of That's Entertainment, usually what happens on this show is me and my co-host, my Aunt Beth, we pick a pop culture topic and discuss it according to the three F's, first, favorite, and forever. Our early memories, our favorite memories, and our current thoughts about a topic. Occasionally, we branch out into a topic that Aunt Beth isn't as much of a super fan as I am. And one of those was the March Madness, the college basketball tournament. I'm a huge fan of it. Aunt Beth isn't as big a sporto in general as I am. So I brought on my friend... my fellow Jeff Smith here, and like some other topics on That's Entertainment. After doing it a first year, doing a full-length episode of that topic, in subsequent years, we've done shorter-like episodes, just talking about recapping the most current edition, so we've done that with the Oscars and the Emmys, and March Madness is part of that collection as well. And last year we brought on my dad, frequent guest, Bob Malone. He wasn't able to join us for this recording, but he did leave us some thoughts that he had. So we'll sprinkle those in along with the two Jeff's thoughts. So, let's see. Okay. Well, I guess before we dive in, viewers, you should know that I'm sitting in my bedroom with my windows closed here in April, wearing jeans, not shorts. My toes are slightly cold, but not cold enough to need slippers on, at least not at the moment. And Jeff, how's it for you at the moment?
I'm sitting outside on my deck in Western Pennsylvania with not a single amount of snow on the ground, and it's in the upper 60s here, and wearing a long sleeve t-shirt is comfortable enough. You don't have that happen very often back here, so we'll enjoy it while it lasts, that's for sure.
Well, yeah, all of the snow is melted here in New York as of about 5 weeks ago, maybe 4 or 5 weeks ago. When did the last snow fall melt away for you guys?
It honestly might have been even a little bit longer for us. Like it's been gone for a while back here. We had that one big storm, and then we didn't have a subsequent mm-hmm. storm after it. It was kind of a one and done deal, where I know the East Coast got a second one not far after. Our second storm was like nothing because it just clipped us. So we were kind of lucky in that sense this year.
Yeah, we New York had quite the winter this year. But then we also had an early summer preview, actually, just a couple weeks after that blizzard. So that the melting happened fast. But anyway, and it happened fast enough for the roads to be cleared for March Madness. Shall we dive into our biggest takeaways of the 2026 editions?
I'm in. I'm ready. Let's do it.
In case you weren't watching or have forgotten in the week or so since the championship games, the men's tournament ended with Michigan Wolverines defeating the UConn Huskies in the final, and over the women's sides, the UCLA Bruins defeated South Carolina Gamecocks. So Big Ten winners for both the men's and the women's. So check in with my dad first and see what his biggest takeaways were. He was so glad that Michigan won because they were clearly the best team in the tournament. But UConn can win games they shouldn't. I think he might be referencing one particular game there. Lendenberg was not even 50% himself. And 100% this game is not even close, he thinks. My dad also likes Dusty May, who has so much more class than Dan Hurley. But he doesn't think he coached the best game. Despite that, they won anyway. Lendenberg played too much, and Mara should have been inside all the time. With the team forcing the ball to him. It was a funny game. Michigan could have lost, but they easily could have won by 20. So those are my dad's thoughts to set the tone. Those were all about the championship game. But let's mention his thoughts on the women's as well. He was surprised by UCLA, but he was not surprised by Gino or Ariema's boorish behavior. So backing up to some Final Four thoughts there as well. So that's what we've got to start off with. So Jeff, your biggest takeaways on the whole tournament, as well as on how your bracket did.
Yeah, I mean, overall, it was kind of a nice mix, I felt, going into the Final Four. You had four really good teams on the men's side, and it was hopefully going to lead to some really tight games. And I feel like the Final Four was a bit disappointing just with the spread and the games, and the championship wasn't the best played game either from a shot perspective. But in the end, you got four teams there that you could deservedly say made it a case to get there. I mean, going in, I felt like my Final Four picks were about the same for like most people. I had three ones. I had Duke, Arizona, Michigan, and I decided I didn't want to go all chalk. So I took Houston, figuring they were in their own home region, as my fourth number one seed. And then I pitted a Big 12 rematch. I thought Arizona was honestly the best team all year. And I mean, after the way they played against Michigan, it made me rethink that just a little bit. And I had a Big 12 rematch of Houston and Arizona in the finals and Arizona winning, which I felt overall I was pretty pleased about in the long run, having a couple of my Final Four teams make it. And I mean, that's just the beauty of the tournament, is sometimes it just doesn't go your way. And I felt like some of my upsets necessarily didn't hit, but I wasn't penalized for them along the way in the tournament either. I lost Florida, but most people did. But a lot of my earlier upsets, I had the team losing in the next round, and that was okay. Like, nothing really burned me where I lost a team that I had in my Elite Eight in like the first round. So it was kind of it was a safe year in that sense.
Yeah, it was a little differently for me, at least in the early rounds. I had a terrible first round. I was second to last, I believe, at the end of the first round in the one pool that I was in. And it was mainly the close seeded games. So like, I think I only got 1-8-9 game right. I got 2 of the 7-10 game rights. But I got none of the 6-11 games right, because 2-6s won and 2-11s won. I picked 2-6s and 2-11s, but were the wrong ones of each of those. Then the 5-12 games, I only got one of those right, because I picked 2-12s and not the 1-12 seed that did win. But it's like, well, my Final Four is still alive. I had a similar one as you. I had the same one seeds that you picked. I went with Illinois instead of Houston. So that worked out for me. So I was 8 seconds away from having a perfect Final Four. I'm like, well, I have a chance to move up, but there were people ahead of me. There was like one person ahead of me who had the exact same Final Four and the exact same championship outcome. So it was like, well, I can't win, but I did end up finishing in eighth, I believe. So huge moving up, because I picked Michigan to win it all. Had a respectable finish, but my mom finished fifth in that pool. So at least someone in the family did well. We are not a video podcast, so viewers can't see what shirt Jeff is wearing. I'm repping my alma mater. I've got my Loyola basketball shirt on.
Oh, there we go.
Jeff is wearing not his alma mater. He said he's wearing, well, they're not quite a rival of their alma mater because they don't play very often, but you'd think they could be. Jeff went to Penn State, but instead he's wearing a UPenn shirt. Did you pick them to win it all this tournament?
Sadly, no. I didn't even pick them in the Ivy League tournament, to be honest. Not that I can't say I wasn't pulling for them. I don't know. Did you watch any of those Ivy League games?
I think I did watch some of the conference tournament final. They played Yale, right?
Yeah.
I remember that being an exciting game.
Yeah, that was something. I feel like the conference tournaments this year had a lot to offer too. And I don't know if you saw the clips either, but we had games here in Pittsburgh. The A-10 tournament was here, and there was a Saturday game in the semifinals between St. Louis and Dayton, where they traded threes back and forth, mm-hmm, each side in the last 15 seconds of the game, and then Dayton came down and hit a shot at the end with like tenths of seconds left as well, too. It was just a wild, wild ending.
Yeah.
Here, too.
Not sure if we watched any of that, because that would have been like the day before Selection Sunday, right? So there was a ton of games. So we might have put that game on for a few minutes, but and then let's see. On the women's bracket, I filled out a women's bracket. Fortunately, there's not as many women's bracket pools for money, but I did. I picked UConn to win it all. I mean, no, but I can't. No, you know, that's not going out on a limb there. But I wanted to pick UCLA to win it all. I didn't quite have the nerve to do it, but I really liked this UCLA team, and I was glad they won it. Yeah, as for my thoughts overall in the tournament, not in terms of just bracket results, I felt the top seeds dominated for the most part in both the men's and women's, especially the early rounds. With the exception of Iowa beating Florida. But there were some surprises in the later rounds. More so in the men's tournament, I guess. The Duke women really gave UCLA a run for their money in, what was that, the Elite Eight. The surprise was... The surprises in the Final Four for the women were the size of the victories. You know, none of those games were close. None of the semifinals or finals. You know, it wasn't shocking that South Carolina beat UConn, but geez, that seemed to wreck reality for someone on the sideline, in particular. Were you watching that live? The UConn South Carolina.
I was, and as soon as it happened, it you kind of thought, wait a minute, did that really just happen? And I mean, I guess I know, like your dad said, you know, expect the unexpected with Gino.
He doesn't have the classiest reputation, but I don't like that. That was another level. And I'm like, I couldn't make sense of what the heck that was all about. But yeah, that could have easily, it could have been,
wow.
I was, no, go like, ahead. It could have gotten so much more out of hand, but yeah. I don't know. Dawn Staley took, the high road ultimately, but also she took the high road while also still displaying attitude about the situation. Like, okay, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. I felt like that was a typical Dawn Staley kind of reaction to the whole situation as well, too, from just her personality over the years as a player and a coach, too. So that wasn't unexpected. No, but what I was going to say is I was going to try to throw a trivia time at you.
Let's hear it.
Let's see. It's long lines of women's Final Four. All right. How many times in women's NCAA tournament history have we had an all-chalk, all-number-one seed Final Four?
Let's see. It didn't happen last year, although it kind of felt like it. But weirdly, UConn was a two seed. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say 12 times.
It's actually a lot lower than that. It's the fifth time this year that it happened. It happened in 1989, 2012, 2015, and last time it happened before this year was 2018. Okay. I was like with you. I thought that they always talk about all the time how there's not as many upsets on the women's side, and it's usually a tournament where the favorites do win more often than not, and I thought that would be a lot higher of a number than that.
It does feel like women's are chalkier in general, but I guess, it only takes one 2 seed or one 3 seed or, you know, whatever. It takes just one upset to mess that up. I have written down here best/worst moment, was the UConn buzzer beater. We kind of teased it a bit against Duke in the in the Elite Eight. I mean, best because it was just such a great shot and capping off such a great comeback, but worst because it messed up my perfect Final Four, and because of like, I didn't really want UConn back in the Final Four again. You know, I don't hate them too as much as some others. I'm not totally disgusted by Dan Hurley. I get why my dad and other people don't like him. And I don't disagree with their criticism of him, but my feeling about him is he's not so great. He's kind of offensive at his worst, but he's fun. Seems like he's fun to be around when he's at his best.
No, I kind of agree. Like I was always bothered more about Jim Calhoun for some reason than Dan Hurley.
Interesting. Why was that?
I don't know. Just something about just his arrogance, I thought, always kind of rubbed me the wrong way, too. I don't know if it was more so necessarily in more of the Big East heyday where, you know, when UConn would play even Syracuse, I'd rather pull for Syracuse. When UConn would play Pitt, I'd pull for Pitt. Or UConn-Villanova, I'd pick Villanova. Mm-hmm. Like, I was always like, I'm not really the biggest UConn fan here to begin with. But I remember liking them back when they won that first championship back in 99, that Khalid Al-Amin team. Like I thought they were fun, but then just over the years, couldn't stand Jim Calhoun for one reason or another.
Interesting. Okay, well, should we have any more thoughts on the games and the bracket before
I've got a good question.
Okay.
I should have given you a little bit more prep for this one and not put you on the spot. Where would you rank Mullen's shot? If you were to rank all the shots in NCAA tournament history, would it be top five, top 10?
Maybe like, top five. I'd have to think. The two that come to mind immediately are the Christian Laettner shot, which was – that was Elite Eight, I believe.
It was. Yeah. Yep. I put a list together with my top five. I have Laettner.
Okay,
four.
And then that and the Jalen Suggs for Gonzaga. That was 5 years ago at that point. At this point, I don't know if that's.
I have Suggs at five.
Okay, I don't know if those are my top two, but those are definitely up there. And then. Another one I like a lot, which I think was Bryce Drew, right, for Valparaiso.
Yep.
And that was a first round game, wasn't it?
It was, But they were a 13 seed.
Yeah, that's still quite a play. And I mean, I got to have at least one Cinderella in there. I don't know if that's my top three, but they would definitely be under consideration. And I would probably, I mean, I don't want to. I want to be able to think about it for a bit. So Mullen being this year, I'm like, give me until next year before I decide where that would be. But yeah, that would probably be somewhere in my top 10. I don't know if it would quite crack the top five.
All right. Do you want me to spoil?
Yeah, go ahead.
My
if
five?
You got it prepared.
Yeah, no, I got it. All right. Five, you were right. I had Jalen Suggs and the shot against UCLA. I feel like a lot of people forget that one just with the whole year after COVID, kind of still strange NCAA tournament.
Now, for me, that made it more memorable. Like, I couldn't forget this.
I know.
Yeah.
I know. That whole clip of just seeing it happen and just how the bench was separated, the broadcasters had their plexiglass between them. Like, it was a totally different experience. No, that I had Laettner at four, and I have my reasons for it. I'll get to those too. I mean, I know you think NCAA tournament Christian Laettner shot against Kentucky, like that should be higher. But no, I have Mullins at three. And my reasoning behind it is just the whole fact that, you know, UConn did not have the ball when that whole sequence started, but Duke did have the ball. So I kind of looked at it that way. And I said for my top two, it's like, I guess you have to go with the two that won championships. And I have Derek Wittenberg and Lorenzo Charles and NC State, the two. winning at the end on the dunk, and then Chris Jenkins from Villanova won. Yeah, I kind of looked at that as being my highest priority, and then kind of working my way down from there. And that was the hardest one for me, the debate between Mullins and Leitner, like which order would I go in? And I thought that's my safest bet, is just because the whole absurdity of the fact that if Caden Boozer just held on to that ball for a little bit longer, he would have gotten fouled, and this wouldn't even been a thing. So,
I think if you're saying, not just if you're phrasing it as game-winning shot, or then I wouldn't be inclined to put it as high, because the shot itself and the pass weren't that impressive. But if you're saying game-winning play, like if you're phrasing it that way, then it's like, well, we're including the steal as well. So I'm like, okay, well then that moves it up, because I think why I'm hesitant to put it as high as some others is because it wasn't as impressive as a three-pointer as those, as the other ones we've mentioned.
No, I mean, that's a good point. I mean, you go back and look at the highlight. He had time to set himself, and he got a good shot off at the hoop. I mean, granted, it was far, but I mean, it's still makeable for a shooter like him.
Yeah. Maybe we'll focus on a ranking like that next year. Maybe we can even challenge ourselves to a top 25 or something.
Yeah, there we go. I'm in for that. Give me a little bit of prep work here, and that would be nice to dig down a rabbit hole on YouTube and just go back and remember all these things that happened that we forget about.
Okay. Well, shall we move on to the stuff around the games? We've talked about announcers in the past and commercials, but it was mostly the same announcing lineups this year as last year. There's always new commercials, although or a new batch of the same type of commercials. But yeah, let's see. My dad. Let's make sure we don't forget. My dad had to say. Actually, before we get into that, he did have some thoughts about some other games. St. John's versus Kansas. That's going back to the second round. He thought that was the ugliest game of the tournament that he saw, but the last 4 minutes were exciting. Then Florida versus Iowa, that was the biggest upset. I was not that good. Actually, I picked Florida to lose early, but one more round. I had them losing to Nebraska. And then Iowa goes and beats Nebraska as well. And he also mentioned Texas versus Purdue. Sean Miller and Texas players were nasty and dirty. And he had some other thoughts about players. He was most impressed with Lindenberg and Cam Boozer. Mara on Michigan is the most coordinated big he's seen in some time. D. Peterson, who's that? What team is he on?
Kansas. Darren Peterson.
He does not look like a top three player to my dad. Has he been mentioned as a going high in the draft?
Yeah, they honestly think, well, I mean, it's crazy to think about their college performances. A lot of NBA scouts, from what I've heard over the winter, think that Peterson's actually going to get a pick before Boozer.
Draft.
They just like his ability to make shots and create his own shots as well, too. They think that's going to translate well on the next level. I think they almost liken Peterson to almost like a Donovan Mitchell type.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm not a scout, but at least based on what I saw in the tournament, the most impressed I was by anyone was Mara, Ade Mara on Michigan, who was, I agree with my dad, very coordinated. I would not have guessed that he's 7'3". Like, he seems more like... Yeah. He has a decent outside shot. I would have guessed 6'10" or something, but I don't know. 7-footers can do anything nowadays. And in the women's game, he loves Hannah Hidalgo. But moving on to and he also mentioned the reffing. He felt it was very consistent in the early rounds and many games from half to half. Too many video reviews and too many flagrant fouls. The early rounds, it can be overwhelming. And I'm also, sometimes I'll have, I may have mentioned this on past podcasts, I'll be watching a non-sports show on my TV, and then I have a game playing on silent on my computer. Did you think there were a lot of too many flagrants or anything like that?
You know, I did. I thought it was interesting. Like, we got a first-hand knowledge on the hook and hold this year in so many tournament games, where I feel like now I can spot it a whole lot easier. And I feel like Gene Steratore got his run explaining hook and hold in so many of the games that I watched as well, too. So Gene's actually from Western Pennsylvania, so it's always funny to see him on TV as well.
So did your mom is originally from Pittsburgh. Does her family know the Steratore family?
No, surprisingly not. Not everybody back here knows everybody, but
Pittsburgh's not that small a city.
No, not okay. Not quite. So,
but yeah, okay. So let's move on. Yeah, So did you have any thoughts about announcers or commercials or anything else, like any pre-game or post-game in studio stuff?
Yeah, no. I thought, now I know what your dad thought as well, and I know we'll get to that as well. I did like the Kevin Harlan, Robbie Hummel, and Stan Van Gundy.
Yes,
trio. I thought less is more with Stan Van Gundy.
Okay, yeah. So since you started there, we'll mention my dad that yes. Yeah. So he says Kevin Harlan sounds like a race car announcer. Just like a shot, a miss, a rebound. And Stan Van Gundy, according to my dad, regardless of his insights, has such an irritating voice. So it sounds like you're somewhat in agreement, but a little more positive on that crew, at least.
I do think that Robbie Hummel is going to be the eventual replacement for Bill Rafferty when that time eventually happens. I thought he had an outstanding tournament, and I hope CBS capitalizes on and keeps him on as much coverage as they can get, because I definitely liked his insight and what he brought. And then, I mean, as always, the main team of Ian Eagle, Grant Hill, and Bill Rafferty were just right on top of their game as well. And it made me almost wonder, too, you know, a lot of times in sports broadcasting, it's kind of like the whole three-man booth is frowned upon, because it's just like there's not enough time for two analysts to kind of fill that space. But it also makes me wonder, too, like, is it just not getting the right combination and having the right chemistry? Like, I look at those top two teams this year. You had a former player in Hummel and Hill and a former coach in Van Gundy and Rafferty. Do you need that balance of one of each, where, you know, the coach can defer to the player can defer to the coach, and it kind of makes it easier for the play-by-play broadcaster to kind of direct the question? And two, is it more of a coach question? Is it more of a player question as well, where I did like having that insight from both sides of the equation as well, too, where it's like, do more of the broadcast teams need to look that way as well?
It's certainly one way to do it. But I mean, yeah, I think there's also such a personality difference between Raftery and Hill, especially. To me, that's why a big reason why I like them so much. Like, it's such a complementary unit. Like, the way I would describe, like, my thought is Ian Eagle, the play-by-play, he comes up with these descriptions and these puns on the fly. He probably has some prepared ahead of time. And I'm thinking, my reaction to his is, how does he come up with this stuff? And then Bill Raftery has his catchphrases and his noises, and I'm like, what the heck is he even talking about? But he makes it work. And then Grant is stuck in the middle, and he's so much more subdued than either of his partners. And he sometimes can gets lost in their whirlwind. And I'm like, okay, no, he is on their wavelength, or at least, like, he knows how to, he's on his own wavelength, but he's attached to theirs, or however you want to describe it. Yeah, but my, So would yeah. So my dad said number one team is excellent. Those three guys, and he and I have the same pick for the best line, the best call by Ian Eagle in this tournament, which was you already know what it was because my dad sent it to both of us, but it was waiting for Cadeau, Michigan's Cadeau. I guess hopefully our listeners are learned enough to pick up that reference, or at least willing. Yeah. How many March Madness viewers do you think got that reference? And of those that didn't, how many do you think looked it up to figure out what Ian was talking about?
Yeah, I feel like it was probably more along that side of things. That's for sure. Along the announcer line, too, I was wondering, Jeff, your thoughts. Did you watch a decent amount of the halftime shows? Because I thought Nate Burleson was so out of place being a studio host. And, I mean, his role, I mean, granted, he's a former NFL receiver. It just didn't fit. And you just needed that traditional kind of host to play traffic cop almost and direct it to the analysts and the experts and just stick to the highlights. I didn't need to see, like, someone who would like mentally tell me who I should pick in my brackets or things like that. Like I didn't need that. I would have just been happy flipping over to another channel to just give me the highlights and the analysis and then be good.
That I didn't notice as much. I didn't watch, or at least didn't pay attention too much to the early games halftime shows, mostly just the later games, Final Four and the final really. So there you had like the top crew, Ernie and Charles and Kenny and Bruce Pearl. I don't think he adds too much, but I didn't notice that with Nate, but I can understand that. But he seems to be like CBS's kind of do everything guy.
I think the thought is there that, you know, James Brown is getting up there in age and Burleson could be a replacement on the NFL Today eventually as well. But it just seems like that's a whole different animal than covering March Madness as well.
Yeah. Well, he's a decent game show host. Have you ever watched any Hollywood Squares with him?
I have, yeah. No, he's good. He's good in that sense. Yeah.
Okay, and then my dad also. Oh, he said Steve Lapis also has an annoying voice. Oh well, I hope Steve is a decent guy at least. Okay. Any more announcer thoughts?
No, not. Actually, yeah. Before I forget as well, credit to Jason Benetti, the MLB announcer and do-it-all announcer. He's now the lead guy on NBC's Sunday Night Baseball. He filled in for Brian Anderson the first day of the tournament when his voice was shot, and he was excellent. I wish that CBS and Turner could find a way to keep Benetti for future years, and the only reason they were able to call on him was he was going to call the radio games in Buffalo where Anderson's crew was for Westwood One, and he just filled in and took all the TV games that day. I think Jason Benetti is one of the most talented announcers we have in any sport right now, and it was great to see him get that opportunity. And I was kind of miffed that Anderson was feeling better come Saturday, because I like Brian Anderson as an announcer too, but I think Benetti is one of the top announcers we have in any sport, so I wish he would have gotten more run. So here's hoping he'll be back next year in some way.
I don't think I hear Benetti too often. What is he? Do you say he mainly does baseball?
He does. Well, I don't know what his contract looks like. He was on Fox doing college basketball and football the last couple of years. Now he just signed a contract with NBC, who has now the Sunday Night Baseball package as well, and he does that, and he's the regular play-by-play announcer for the Detroit Tigers as well. So somehow, some way, he's able to fit that all in his schedule and do it, but he's good.
All right. Well, so any commercials or that stood out or anything like any fun, goofy, silly moments like that are worth mentioning. My dad wrote, as far as commercials go, Tatum. I don't. Was there a commercial with Jason Tatum that got played a lot?
There's not one that I remember that stood out to me.
I'm not sure what that is referencing either. Maybe we'll check in with my dad later about that. But yeah, anything that deserves a special mention from you?
Do you think the Charles Barkley and Samuel L. Jackson Capital One commercials have run their course?
Well, maybe they can go in a new direction because one of them did feature a very, I thought, a terrific addition who also made an appearance in studio. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I can't think of it off the top
of my
head.
Someone who visited us from the past, very important to the game of basketball.
Oh, yes,
Dr. Naismith. Dr. James Naismith. I guess he looks as spry as he was in, 1930? When did he invent basketball?
Earlier than that?
Yes. Will Forte played Dr. Naismith in both the Capital One commercial and in between the Final Four games. I thought that was I'd be happy to see him return.
As long as this doesn't turn into something like KFC when they decided to start switching the Colonel Sanders to like 20 different actors or something like that, and we'll just keep Will in his job there, I'd be for that.
Yeah, that would be an odd direction to go in, but yeah, like this was like perfectly up Will Forte's alley, like someone from 100 years ago transported to the modern day. It would be totally different if they were did a recasting. But okay, let's see. We also, I don't know if we've done this in previous years. Maybe we've had, but any great player names or nicknames?
Oh, this is my favorite part of show research for this year. So every year to kind of prep myself for the tournament, there is a guy on X who puts together, no lie, like a 700-page research of all the NCAA tournament facts and historical stats and rosters and data for this year's teams. So to get ready for this, I scoured the PDF and I was looking through all the rosters to find some of my favorite names on here. So I've got a nice solid list here I could go through.
Okay. Well, you know what? Before you do that, my list is much shorter, so I'll let that be a lead-in. I think my favorite name that stood out for me, actual name, given name, is Solo Ball. I forget who he played with. What team was he on?
He was on UConn.
Yeah, I knew it was a team that made it pretty far. But then I will say I wish a different team had made it further. That would have meant that they would have had to have upset the team that I picked to win it all, and you did win it all. But I would have loved for St. Louis to have gone farther so we could have seen more of Larry Blurd, a.k.a. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, a.k.a. Milk Chamberlain. These are all just a few of the nicknames of Robbie Avila, who's he's about 6'7", 6'8", sharpshooter for St. Louis who wears goggles, protective goggles. So he kind of looks like a nerdier Larry Bird. Shaquille Oatmeal, one more name for him. If you were watching early games, you got to know him. But yeah, it would have been nice if he'd kept on playing and even more people got to know all those wonderful nicknames. But yeah, you take it away with your list.
All right. All right. So I've got first teammates from Gonzaga. We have guards Emmanuel Innocenti, or it looks like Innocenti, Mario Saint Superi. And then we have a guard from Queens University in Charlotte, Jimma James, J-I-M-M-A. Howard University has a guard named River Smith, no relation. Vanderbilt, did you catch this one, Jeff? Vanderbilt has a forward, Chandler Bing.
Oh yeah, no, I did. And you know what it says on his on like the fun facts section of his player page on Vanderbilt's athletics website? I believe it says has never seen an episode of Friends.
Yeah. Oh, that's good. Texas A&M has a forward. Now, he used to play at Pitt as well. So he was a transfer. His name is Federico Federico. First name and last name smelled exactly like the same.
Mario.
Right. Clemson had a guard, Butta, B-U-T-T-A Johnson. High Point had a forward, Berger, B-I-R-G-I-R, Berger Irving. And then I think my favorite one, and I had to look up the pronunciation of it as well. Now, granted, he only got in four games this year and averaged a minute and a half per game and 0.5 points per game. But reading his pronunciation guide here, Pupa is his first name, and his last name is War-a-cool-naro. So if you want the spelling behind this, it is P-O-O-H-P-H-A, that's Pupa. And then his last name, W-A-R-A-K-U-L-N-U-K-R-O-H. He's a guard from the University of Central Florida. He played four games total for the Knights this year. No run in the tournament, but he was on the squad. He was in the stat book. So,
did Central Florida make it to any of the tournaments? Like, were they in the NIT or the College Basketball Crown?
What's that, the men's team? Oh, yeah, no. Remember, they were a 10 seed. They played UCLA in the first round. Yeah. No, I stopped all tournament teams for this one.
Yeah, I forgot that UCF was in it. Never mind.
So if UCF was out, then Pupa would not have made the cut here. So.
All right. Yeah, as much as I love March Madness, it's hard to keep track of all 68 teams that were in it on any given year. Okay. Yeah, anything else that we had to cover?
No, I mean, I like some of the additions this year. I mean, now we have kind of a little bit of homework here. I mean, top 25 shots for next year. Maybe I've got to find the women's 700-page PDF and scour their rosters as well for best names for next year. Got a little bit.
We'll have to work on that. Let's see. Can we think of off the top of our heads any great women's names from this year? AZ Fudd is a pretty good one.
Yeah, that's why I was going to go with AZ. I think. Reagan Beers from Oklahoma is pretty good.
What
too.
Was that?
Reagan Beers.
That's a decent one.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I have a couple of questions for you. One is your an opinion question. One is a trivia question. I'll do the opinion one first. What do you think is the ideal start time for the championship game? Tip off was what, 8:49 p.m. Eastern time. What do you think? Should it be earlier or later?
Oh, I am all for as I get older and older here. Earlier start times, the better. It's funny. We talk about here all the time about how people that live on the West Coast have the ideal schedule. And you see people that complain about, NFL games start out there, the 1 o'clock games. Like, the Steelers will be on at 10 a.m. That sounds wonderful to me. If I could come home from work and the men's tournament final tipped off at 6 o'clock, that's ideal. I wish that game would start earlier, and I know they've slid it up about half an hour, but still, it's too late. And I mean, that's just us East Coast fans suffering. I wish it was a lot earlier, and I don't know. Maybe I need to retire and just move to the West Coast, and I'll be perfect with my sports watching abilities.
Maybe my dad agrees with you. He says it should be earlier, about 7:30 p.m. or 8 p.m. I mean, maybe part of it has to do with it's on a Monday night, so I guess I don't know. Maybe that makes it tricky with, CBS has their local channel commitments before 8 o'clock, but it's on TBS and TNT this year. I think it alternates every other year. But these channels can do it earlier if they want to. Like, what, like, I was going to say, actually, I was going to say NBA on their Tuesday night games. They usually start, NBC's Tuesday night games have started at 8 o'clock usually this season, right? But at the opening week, wasn't the first one at 7? So,
yes.
Yeah, and this is just one game. So, like, and then, you know, obviously, and then opening day, opening weekend, they've got games all day. Well, CBS, they have their, they have a break in between for local news and whatever. But yeah, still, like, geez, almost 9 o'clock. You know, Aunt Beth and I had this same discussion about the Oscars. The Oscars should, the problem with the Oscars isn't that they're too long, it's that they start too late. And now they've been starting earlier. So March Madness, you're on notice. Start the championship game earlier. We don't have this issue with the and women.
Even along those lines too, Jeff, I remember when we were younger how the second round, that Sunday, was always wrapped up. And they always made a big deal about it. It was always done by the time 60 Minutes came on. And now you're getting these Sunday night games that are tipping after 10 o'clock. I wish I could go back to the way it was. And I think once Turner got involved and they could push games to those other channels, that kind of was gone by the wayside. But I wish it could go back to that way, because I thought the best day of watching was that Sunday of the Elite Eight, where those two games were, what, 2:20 and 5 o'clock?
Yeah.
That's perfect.
Well, the Elite Eight is still that way, right? Isn't it? Wasn't it just the two games at like 2:30-ish and 5 o'clock?
The Sunday is. The Saturday is like 6 and 8:45. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I don't hate that the Saturday is that. I don't know if I'll be – I'm not necessarily staying up for all of the second game, but I don't think it's outrageous that a Saturday night game starts that late. But okay, on to the trivia question I have. You may have seen this, but let's when was the last year the same conference won both the men's and women's tournaments, as happened this year, and the college football championship? Because was what happened this year. So all Big Ten teams, UCLA in the women's, Michigan in the men's, and Indiana won football. I guess you weren't watching SportsCenter at the same time when I saw this.
No. Man, my first thought was, until you threw the football in there, was going to be, oh, it had to have been one of those years Villanova won on the men's side and the UConn women probably won and Big East. But yeah, Big East football is gone by the wayside and then some. So that's not a possibility.
Yeah, I think I was also looking, I was considering asking just men's and women's basketball last time that happened. And I think it might have been 2016 when it was UConn women and Villanova men. But yeah, it goes further back when you add football in there as well.
I know, because it's funny. You think a lot about, like, okay, you know, when Duke or North Carolina might have won. I mean, the ACC is not really known for winning a lot of football championships. Honestly, that might be my stab in the dark. Like, is it like 1993 with like North Carolina winning in basketball for the men and Florida State winning in football? Like, is it the ACC back in like the 90s?
It's not the ACC, and it's more recent than that. I can give you the do you want to know the conference?
Well, let me see if I can do process elimination here, because I know they always make a big deal about the Big Ten not winning the championship in forever in men, so it's not them, I wouldn't think.
No, it's not the Big Ten.
I don't think it was the Pac-12, I mean, or Pac-10, or whatever they were. So I guess what it'd have to be the SEC then. I mean, that makes sense, football. Okay, was it a year that like Kentucky won for the men and maybe Tennessee for the women or LSU for the women? All right, maybe I'll make that my guess. Like, is it like 2014?
Further back.
Okay, all right, you're going to have to hit me. What is it?
2007.
Okay. So that would have been a Florida man.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And, oh, was it Florida for football as
it
well?
It was. And what would the women have been?
Would that have been a Tennessee team?
Yes, it was a Candace Parker-led Tennessee team.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, that is a good question.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know that I would have gotten that without seeing that beforehand, but yeah. Okay. Well, we've almost been going for an hour, even though, so I guess we can't really call this a mini episode. Yeah, there's at least 68 things to talk about, or 136 things to talk about in any given March Madness recap. Yeah, I guess, shall we come back for this again next year?
Yeah, that sounds good. I mean, there is that chatter that they might want to expand the tournament. So who knows? We might need to add in a couple more 8 to 16 things possibly to be talking about next year,
too. We'll have to do our recording earlier to make sure we don't fall asleep. Yeah, okay.
That's right.
Well, I'll mention quick, as usual, I'll mention if we've got our Patreon if you'd like to support us. And also, I'll mention, is Ken Jeong a fan of March Madness, do you think? Would he be interested in guesting on our episode next year?
You know, it's funny. I've seen him courtside at a lot of Duke games.
He's an alum there.
So
yeah.
I think he's in.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. I wonder how his reaction was when Mullen made that buzzer beater. Okay. Do you have anything, any final thoughts, any recommendations, anything to promote?
No, well, you know what? It's funny. I know I mentioned their podcast at the beginning, and even though we're getting into the off season here, I think it's worth a listen to the Eye on Basketball podcast. Those two guys there, Gary Parrish and Matt Norlander, they know their stuff. And even when you get into it's funny what you think about with basketball, the off season is the middle of summer, but they're still going year round talking about college basketball. It is a good listen, and they'll start previewing next year come the summer months when they want to start getting people ready for the next season. So that is a thing I'll vouch for. And you give a listen soon, you might still hear that late 90s intro that everybody loves. I mean, just listen to the first minute and a half before they even start talking, you'll get your fix of what it was like in the good old days. Mm-hmm. Here.
Okay, well, I mean, I know I start thinking about March Madness around May or so. Like, that's when I start caring about the college basketball season. There are some other things that tide me over, but I'll be looking ahead. Okay, and then I'll make sure, so you can follow us on social media as usual. We're still on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, and Blue Sky. I still call Twitter. I blue skeet more often than I tweet nowadays for the official That's Entertainment socials. But yeah, okay. I'll Jeff, thank you for joining us again. I'll let you offer some sort of farewell greeting.
Jeff, it's always my pleasure to come on to talk college basketball, I guess. Hopefully. Same time, same place next year. And here's hoping I get a nice night again here where I can sit outside and enjoy a nice spring evening in Western PA.
Yes, when the March Madness ends, that's the time to start letting off the layers. At least that's how it should be. I'll, of course, say keep your remotes handy and your eyes open and nothing but the bottom of the net. Thank you.